So, guys, we've got a special guest with us today. We've got Matt Inholt, who is an active guy on Twitter. He's an FC Cincinnati fan as well as a CFC owner. He took part in the ownership push that was done from the late fall into the early spring for CFC. And he's joining us to kind of give us his a little bit of his perspective on an outsider's view of what's going on between CFC and the Red Wolves, as well as some stuff about how attendance plays a part in lower division soccer, and quite frankly, how some of the magical and imaginary numbers that everyone puts out, how that plays a part as well. So I want to thank you, Matt, for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate being on. I know we kind of circled the wagon here for a while, but it's nice to finally get to talk to you.
Yeah, and just to give some background, Matt reached out to me and just basically said he'd love to talk to me about attendance. And honestly, it's one of the things that I really enjoy talking about because I think there's a lot of different perspectives on it. So it's probably, what, 2-3 months ago at least? And yeah. I dropped the ball and just didn't follow up like I should have. He reached back out to me. And so thank you so much for being patient on this. And so I'll let you kind of start us off because it was you that reached out.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, what you want to talk about and go from there.
Okay. Well, yeah, I, first off, I, just want to start off by saying as you said, I am an outsider. I'm an FC Cincinnati season ticket holder. I've been, sitting in our supporter section since the club came around. So I am familiar with you. We were in USL Division III our first season, and then we were in, USL Division II the next two seasons. Now we're in MLS. But I also became a CFC fan just randomly when me and my wife were on vacation a few years ago.
Okay.
And we were eating at Hi-Fi Clyde's, a barbecue place in downtown Chattanooga. It was really good. And there were a lot of people wearing soccer jerseys, and, you know, us being soccer fans, we were just curious what, you know, I had never heard of Chattanooga FC. And we said, hey, why are you guys all wearing these jerseys? What are you guys, like a local team? And they told us about the club and their support. And we went to a game and sat next to Chattahooligans and kind of just fell in love with the team. It really kind of adopted them as our second team. And we've been to a bunch of games. I was at 3 games this season. So
all right.
We travel down quite a bit.
How far is the drive from the Cincinnati area?
It's about 4.5-5 hours. Part of it is because the Tennessee River is also better fishing than the Ohio River, and I always go fishing when I'm down there too. Gotcha. So I kind of fit both of those in when I come down. But I really enjoy Chattanooga, and I remember hearing about the situation with the USL, you know, I want to say it was August.
Yeah. So the leak started, I think, the last week of July, but the official announcement came in early August, but I think it was already kind of cat out of the bag before the official announcement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And which you could go back and see on Twitter, I was immediately adamantly against it because I saw the pride and the passion from the CFC, Chattahooligans, and everyone. And I said, why are they doing this? You know, this makes no sense. Of course, on social media, there was a lot of negativity from, you know, some of the lower soccer people. We call them the soccer bros. we're a little upset about it. But I hung my Chattanooga scarf on the front row of our supporters section every match the rest of the year.
Okay.
Just in support of Chattanooga. And this was obviously long before they ever offered ownership shares.
Yeah, because that didn't really start for another 3 months. And my understanding, just to give some credit here to CFC, that wasn't a reactionary thing. That's something, my understanding, that they've been looking at doing. And so full disclosure, I've gone to CFC's games since I was literally at the first one 10 years ago. But
Okay, I actually was going to ask you that.
Yeah, so
So.
I've got a long history of going to games, and every at the end of every season they would put out a kind of a survey of sorts just to try to improve what they're doing, because these guys, this is the other thing that's really interesting about their ownership group, is it's a lot of entrepreneurial type guys. I think
Oh yeah, I've read up. I've
yeah.
you Sheldon and Tim Kelly, and yeah, I've done a lot of research and on
And
those too, and they.
Sheldon and he went to the same college that I did, so I have a little bit, I don't know Sheldon personally, but I have a little bit connection to some of the history there too. So I was interested in it from that standpoint. The Brocks, their father was the president of the college when I was at the college, so I have a bit of a connection to the ownership, not personal like knowledge connection. I mean, I had actually had one of the Brocks as a teacher in college at one point, but yeah, so I know those guys from that standpoint. But they send the survey out, and one of the things in the survey frequently was if ownership was offered, a supporter share was offered, would you be interested? So
Okay.
I don't hold it from a stand. A lot of people try to spin it as a reactionary. I don't think it was. I think that was something they've been wanting to do for a while. So, anyways, keep going. I just kind of interrupted that.
Oh, no, I mean, and I think it was a really cool, innovative thing. I had actually, in years past, I remember when Ibar and La Liga, they were selling shares and they sold out so quick I didn't get any. But I was emailing back and forth with some people over in Spain trying to buy into their team, and Cork City was another one over in
In Ireland. Yeah,
was
we've got
in Ireland.
we got a
Yeah, I
former
had
player from Cork
emailed with
City,
them.
so
Yeah. And so I had already had an interest in something like this, and then when it was a club I was familiar with and had attended matches for previously anyway, it was just like, okay, well, how many can I get? I immediately bought, the amount so I'd have a lifetime season pass, and
gotcha.
then I ended up buying more afterwards because I at the Real Betis match this year, I told Nick the drummer that I'd buy another share because it was getting ready to close, that I'd buy another share for every goal scored, so I bought more.
Nice.
And they ended up scoring 3 goals. Pretty amazing for a fourth division
I
American team to.
honestly expected that to be like way more of a blowout than it was. So no, that was impressive.
I mean, yeah, they that the same club went into Barcelona and beat Barcelona 4-3. So
Yeah.
I always, that's like a Twitter joke that, well, I guess Chattanooga's as good as Barcelona, but
Funny.
but so anyway, yeah, the more I researched and read into the whole Red Wolves situation, I'd like your honest, I just am real curious to hear your answer on why then, when the Red Wolves came around, did you decide that that was the club you were going to support over CFC?
Okay, so it's kind of twofold. So I kind of referenced that the survey earlier, and one of the things that was on that survey every year was if the opportunity to move up, and it meant that you would have higher ticket prices, but there'd be more games, would you be interested? And every year I said yes, of course, because I am a huge, first off, I'm a huge sports fan in general, but I'm also a huge soccer fan. I know you're a Liverpool fan, so try
Yes.
not to hold my Arsenal love against me, but
We just won another trophy today, actually. I just
yeah, I know you're like in line for like 45 this year or something ridiculous, but no, like so I'm a big soccer fan, so the idea of it was, yeah, I'm very interested in it. And so on top of that, I had gotten to know a few of the like I mentioned earlier, I knew like through the grapevine type stuff a few of the owners, and I had a lot of respect for them, but I also had gotten to know Sean McDaniel a little bit. And not a lot. Don't have a personal relationship with the McDaniel family either. But what I knew of him was he was a good man. And so, starting in August when it was announced, I wasn't a huge fan of some of the reaction and the way people were going about it. My thought process was, CFC's been here for 10 years. If they didn't think the USL was a good move, they think it's not going to survive. Why is this such a huge deal? Like, I didn't quite
Well,
grasp.
do you know the backstory
No,
behind
I
that,
do. I
though?
do. That's what I'm saying. Like
Okay.
they went after him. The CFC basically,
They
from my
lowballed
understanding,
him.
yeah, I don't know how accurate the low ball part is, but I do know that the final vote was basically almost down the middle with one vote going the other direction. So it was very, very tightly contested. is my understanding. And now that's once again conjecture from, you know, you hear it from one person, you hear it from another. No one fully knows except for who's in that room. That's one of the things I've frequently said.
Yeah. I'm friendly with Sheldon. I'm not going to say I know him, but I have had conversations with him at CFC matches. And I mean, his number's in my phone. I've texted back and forth with Sheldon about things before, but I don't want to get into what I don't want to quote Sheldon on anything in this.
And if you've got other information, I would trust Sheldon as well. I think he's an honest man. But I still hold there's probably more to it than either side's willing to admit on the other side.
And I'll give you that.
Yeah. So for me, it was, okay, I've been to a lot of games. I've never officially been a part of the Chattahooligans. For me, just because I'm one of those guys, and I've struggled this year too, because I've gone to a lot of stuff and tried to sit in the supporter section at the Red Bulls game. Once I get into a game, I'm basically staring it down. I'm that silent guy who's staring at the game. So I've always felt out of place there to a point, but I went in there and, you know, I drummed on Bertha a couple times, a few games here or there. Like, I got to know a few of them. They're good guys, like, for the most part. My impression has been really good. Since this has started, I've gotten a chance to talk with Andrew Breezy in an extended period, just kind of ran into him. He's a very recognizable guy, right? Tall, skinny, very recognizable. And I ran into him at a local, actually a local liquor store while he was working. And I ran into him. I talked for him like 30 minutes, like just a good guy. So I'm not disparaging them in general, but the way in which the reaction and some of the vitriol that was thrown, and I think some of the, hateful statements that were made about Sean really turned me off and really bothered me a lot. My original plan was, because at that point we still assumed that, well, if they're not going USL, looking at the landscape, they're going to stay NPSL. And so my thought was, all right, well, I'm going to go to the CSC games. It's basically a 6-week season, right? And then I'm going to have six total months of another choice in the area. So that's where it started for me. And then as we got further along, I felt like it was a better fit for us, just because the longer season, the hateful statements that were made, just really bothered me a lot. And then when Sean was basically thrown under the bus by Tim Kelly, it really turned me off. And I don't think Tim meant it. I don't know.
Talking about that Times Free Press article from January? About the audit and the unauthorized payments.
Yeah, because my understanding...
I mean, that was done by an independent auditor, though, wasn't it? I actually have the article.
No, it is. It was done by an independent auditor, but at the same time, I know enough about accounting to know that...
I have a degree in finance.
Yeah, so you know this, too. So, like, you can present that however you want to present that when the auditor does it. They chose to present it in a way that it would look like Sean had been the perpetrator, because all it has to be unauthorized is that they didn't have an authorized system in place, which if you listen to anyone, that's the one problem that they did have, was they weren't super well structured, and they did give him
because
the
keys. It's a lot of guys that obviously it's not their full-time job. And like you said, entrepreneurs. So
exactly.
That's something on the side for them. That's not what they have there. And everyday focus on.
And the focus at that point, especially early on, was it's an amateur team that has a 6-week season, 6 to 8 week season, depending on how far they go in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just personally felt like there's more to this, and I just really had issue with the fact that if you're going to throw them under the bus like that and treat them like that, and then you're also not pressing charges, I just felt like there's more there. And so that, for me, was the last straw. And so I was...
Yeah, and I mean, we don't know what happened with that. We don't know whether that's resolved or not. But
we don't know if there's an out-of-court settlement that was made before. We don't know any of that stuff. You're right. But at the same time, you don't have to choose to go silent and let people just make their decision. You step up and say, Sean was a former employee. He left on not the best terms, but there is no illegal activity here that we're going to be pressing charges for. And move on.
Yeah, well, I mean, but I'm sure Tim Kelly, when he made some of the statements, and I have the article right here in front of me right now, that I don't know, I'm trying to find something where he says it's real disparaging, like what Tim Kelly says, because what they're quoting in the article, he just said, they identified some financial issues in 2018 and appointed Sheldon. Is there a different article I don't know about where it disparaged him? Because it said, then he said it in the article, we closed 2018 a strong financial position. Thanks to a few new local investors, we look forward to even stronger support with our public investors who span across the world. We're focused on our future, which looks increasingly bright. Anything else we consider an unnecessary distraction at this point.
Yeah, so
in this article, he doesn't really seem to disparage him. It's more the author of this article. There's no quote from Tim Kelly where I'm like, oh, man.
Okay. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I also don't think it was directly in the article. I think it was something he tweeted on his Twitter account. That okay. was my last
And I, I've heard him say things about, oh, he, you know, I think he was on a different podcast there saying that, you know, they trusted somebody and that they let him down. And
yeah, it's that I don't think he directly said Sean let us down. I think it was something that.
Yeah.
Similar,
and I know they had they have an issue with I'll admit that I don't know anything about this, but how the women's team transition went from CFC to the Red Wolves. I know they had an issue with how that went down too.
Yeah, I know a lot of the hooligans did. It was similar to the way the academy here in Chattanooga was. They licensed the CFC name. They didn't it wasn't actually their team. So, and the licensing agreement was done. So that's no different than any other licensing agreement. Like,
yeah.
I get that optics is real bad, and that like they tried to claim that the Red Bulls tried to buy out the CFC Academy. No, it's the same sort of thing. The they have a yearly renewal on their licensing agreement. It went up for a vote. Both the CFC and the Red Bulls presented it, and ultimately the CFC Academy chose to stay on with the CFC logo agreement. That does that type of stuff. I don't even think the majority of hooligans would say, yeah, that's just business. That's not an uncommon, you know, licensing agreements are not uncommon for lots of things. I think eventually CFC will have their own women's team, but the women's team for both sides will never be a big producer. Like I went to those women's games. I have two daughters and I went to those women's games and they were always like, you're talking maybe 75 to 100 fans in the stands.
Yeah.
So it's unfortunately never been something that's been super well supported. You know, here's the thing that's funny about it is when CFC gets their women's team back, which I think once they've established whatever league they end up in long-term, I think they're going to reestablish that team. And I think you'll see better support for it than they had in the past. That's one thing that this has done for the CFC is there were a lot of casual fans. And I think the ones that are going, the 3,500 that are consistently going to these games, they're not going anywhere. Like they've got a strong support.
Well, yeah, because they're most of them. And that's part of my issue with the Red Wolves and the people that support them. And I think we discussed that on Twitter is that they have a vested interest now as owners in the team.
Yeah.
And I, it's hard for me to understand why, you know, people want to support, you know, some random millionaire from Utah over their fellow Chattanoogans who own the team.
Chattanoogans that own that team anymore. Where they talk out of both sides of their mouth a little bit. Like we're a local company that's owned in 30 countries across the world. The majority ownership obviously is still here in Chattanooga. I'm not going to.
I mean, you would
that,
think
but,
90%+.
But at the same, no, yeah, at least. But at the same time, investment from outside resources is not uncommon in indie industry. It's just not. Like the less common thing is the local one. And also on top of that, I still hold that CFC is fighting to find a league that'll work. They turned down the league that would have worked best for them in the USL. They didn't want it. USL presented a lot of possibilities to them. One of the things that they talked about.
The USL is a work. I mean, I think we can all agree that the U.S., the landscape of soccer in this country is not great. You know, just the way everything's set up. But the closed systems, just the way just even player movement operates. It's, you know, the academies are not great. Just, I mean, we all know, well, I don't know how many people listen to this know, but the whole GAM and TAM and MLS and how
it's
you...
It's the most confusing thing ever. It's like, when you see those, like, they traded 500K in TAM for 500K in GAM. You're like,
It's just like, what the hell just happened? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're good. But, no, you're fine on that. It's a tirade that I'm worried about. I'll probably put an E on it just to be safe so that I don't offend someone that has kids, and I'll give my but no,
and I apologize to that person.
not a big deal. So no, I get what you're saying. I'm coming at it from a standpoint of, all right, so what's perfect world, right? I think a majority of, especially soccer fans that are also soccer fans of European leagues, right? The majority of us would say we would love a promotion relegation, a true academy system where you're not having to pay to play, where only rich kids really get a chance, right? That's the dream scenario. Now, here's the thing. I don't think the dream scenario happens anytime soon. Alex and I have talked about this. Alex is definitely more of a, in fact, in our most recent podcast, he refers to himself as a pro rel zealot. While myself, I'm more of a, I'd love to see it happen, but if it doesn't, I want to be realistic in what I'm doing. I think the USL continues to strengthen itself. I think if you look at the performance of like New Mexico and some of those other ones that really never are going to have a chance at MLS, unless MLS just keeps expanding to an infinity, which sometimes it seems like
not
they're doing. But yeah, so those, as they've strengthened that, right? They, you know, this is where we come around to the fake attendance to a point. You don't see the fake attendance with the New Mexico numbers. Like, you look at their stands, they're packed, right? Same thing with Sacramento. Yeah. Same thing with a number of these.
Louisville.
Now, Louisville may end up with an MLS team. I think what the
according to their
fans,
they don't want it. Don't. Right. That's our main rival, and I don't want to start talking about them.
Right.
But
I don't think
they end up in the MLS.
Yeah, but just kind of mentioning some of these places that have had good, strong attendance, more than just the announced attendance, which across U.S. sports is never accurate. And I don't know how often you've actually listened to my podcast, but I make fun of a little bit of the Red Bulls numbers, mainly because I was at the first game, and it was a good crowd. I would say probably a little over 2,000, maybe 2,200. It was full, but that stadium, I think, only holds a little over 3,000. I think they claimed 5 at one point, but that, I think, was originally with the plan to put a stands behind the other goal as well, and they end up not doing that. So I think that's where you get back to like 3,500, somewhere in there. So I've seen, you know, those fake numbers. Like, there's one game we went to, I want to say it was...
What was the game where that Galen, Capo, I don't know...
Are you talking about the drone shot?
Yeah, the drone shot. I mean, there was another time where I think it might even been one of those hipster skeleton DCFC guys that counted every row in the stadium.
No, that was actually the El Conductor who did the counting, who is a hooligan. I don't know how much I bought into that counting, because I was at that game as well. I fully believe that they were over by about 500 at that game, at least. I don't think it
was.
Are
you talking about the drone game?
No, the drone game. That was the one I was going to talk about. So the drone game, they announced, I think, like, I want to say,
1392.
Yeah, 13 something. I was like.
And I mean, you couldn't count more than 200 people in that crowd, because I did it.
I was sitting there going, yeah, that's not the most accurate number I've ever seen. Now, that said, that drone game was also one of the Lightning games. So one of the things that the Rebels have had is 3 Lightning delays at home. And that Lightning was seen in the distance for a while, but it was just far enough away. So I will say, I was at that game. The crowd around the 20-minute mark was probably around 800 to 900. And by the halftime, it was very sparse. And then after that, it was basically empty. But I don't know exactly. I know he claimed it was closer to the right before halftime.
He
I think it was
said
like
the 39th minute.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah, he got a screenshot from the broadcast.
I thought it matched up pretty well.
It was. It was definitely that.
If it's 15 fans, like the thing that I don't really understand with it is they're not lying to themselves. Like, they may be producing like, hey, we had 3,000 fans here and there was 1,200, right? Or we had, using that example, 1,300 fans here and it was 500, right? They know how many actually came through, and yet it hasn't stopped him from building out his stadium complex plan.
No, but I think what it does, it creates a facade that the team is actually more popular and accepted in the community than it really is. That's what I have a problem with, because there, when you do that, people say, oh, there are people going to those games, and then they start going to those games, and it just creates a whole facade around the team when the team is really not being embraced by the community. You know, and I know that it's really not been.
No, I think down there. I think that's probably. I think you may be right to a point on that. I will say though, what you're talking about hasn't happened. Like, it's not like there's suddenly been more fans coming because they saw large crowd numbers being announced. Like, I think that they have a number of significant things going against them. You've been to Chattanooga a few times, but CCS.
Oh, I've been there many times. Yeah.
So CCS is close to Lookout Mountain. You know where that is, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, I drove through East Ridge earlier this year.
Well, it's not in East Ridge. Like,
okay.
It's close to Lookout Mountain, which is, so coming from Finley Stadium, it's about, I'd say, 3 miles from Finley Stadium towards Lookout Mountain.
Yeah, I've been to Rock City. I've been to Ruby Falls. I've been to all the tours.
Yeah, so if you, right there at the incline is basically where the CCS
Mr. T's Pizza.
Yeah, exactly. So right there. And shout out to Mr. T's Pizza.
Yeah, that's delicious. Yeah. It really is good.
And then right across the street, give a shout out to one of the CFC owner's companies, Columpi's Ice Cream, or at least he founded it. He's actually sold it to Rock City. But anyways.
Oh, okay.
So the location is not great. East Ridge not even better. You add into that no beer sales, which, let's be honest, soccer to a point is a – I don't fit in this because I turned 40 this year and have lots of kids and would not consider myself this, but it's becoming, for the fan that goes to the games, the millennial hipster place. If they can't get a beer at the game, there's not going to be a ton coming in. CFC has also done an excellent job of scheduling all of their friendlies or their league games as much as possible when there is a Red Wolves game. That is a purposeful thing. The Red Wolves opening game of the year, they scheduled Detroit City. That's not by accident.
I understand why they did that, though.
But I'm saying that's going to affect those attendance numbers you're talking about. They're taking it from the standpoint of, we're going to do everything we can to keep them from being there. And I think, as much as I really didn't like the location, I talked about this when we did our location review of the stadium, as much as I at first really hated the location, they are going to be going after a different group with where they've placed it. Having it right there by where the training facility is going to be, where Camp Jordan is, where they have a lot of softball, soccer tournaments, stuff like that. It looks like Top Golf is going to be going over there. A number of other things are kind of growing in that little area. It also gets them close to Ootowah, Ringgold, North Georgia. That's kind of a different crowd than you typically get downtown Chattanooga. So I think they're going to attempt to try to go after that suburban soccer mom market. And honestly, CFC has done an excellent job of selling the downtown market. And I think if for the opportunity for both of them to exist, which I still hold as something I would like to see, I think NISA helps them both exist because they'll be on different schedules to a point. They'll overlap at the beginning and end of both seasons. But for the meat of both seasons, they will not be playing at the same time if NISA keeps the fall to spring schedule. I think that helps that happen. And you'll see attendance tick up slowly. That said, I don't know that Bob Martino is looking for this to be selling out the 5,000-seat stadium every night.
No, he's in it. I mean,
he's in it from a real estate perspective.
Yeah, real estate.
And so from a fan's perspective, you know, I want to see higher quality. And I can honestly say the quality of the players on the pitch, not necessarily the top, like some of the top players, like, you know, Juan Hernandez, I enjoyed watching for years, right? And I think Juan could hold his own in USL League One. I'm not discounting that. But I think when you get further down the bench, the quality that's in USL League One is higher than what you get on a traditional
And I'm going to disagree with that because it may be the slightest bit higher, but I adamantly disagree that those players that – really, I have two friends, and one guy used to work for me during the off season that play in the USL now, and one's actually retiring after this season. One just moved to another team.
Okay.
But I know how much those guys make, and they're a level up. These guys are not making, you know, they're hardly making anything. I don't want to get into how much I make versus what they make or whatever. No. But they make very little wages that are, you know, not enough to sustain themselves. Like I said, one would come work for me during the off season.
No, and I'm not disagreeing with that. If I look at the USL players that are even on the Chattanooga team, the majority of them have – sorry, my kids are running in the house. The majority of them have that second job, or they do training on the side, or whatever it is to raise.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm aware of that. But I think there's a difference. Oh, my word. I have daughters that are teenagers, so –
I hear you.
No, but it's, I'm really
well. What I compare it with is like, and now they are now that you know CFC, we've gone you know pro now. But I even before all that came about, I always thought of it as like it. I mean, say you go to Goodwill and somebody's making $10 an hour versus a volunteer at the Salvation Army. A lot of times. Those people, the Salvation Army, because they're doing it, you know, out of their own good free will, are actually going to put forth more effort. And, you know, I guess just because they're playing just straight for the pride of it. And I honestly think that what you said, I don't think like I don't think there's any way the Red Wolves would score. Or any USL team that I've ever seen, including FCC, who we last year, you know, broke all the records in USL League One, would have scored 3 goals on Real Betis. I just don't think that would have happened. The most so we ever scored.
So if you think if CFC and had not pulled out of the Open Cup, because then we would have played them instead of Tormenta 2, do you think they win that game?
Oh, definitely. Okay. I'm
really hoping again because with hopefully they join Nisa and Nisa gets the auto spot because that would give the opportunity for us to, I think that's the only way you're not gonna see us playing friendlies I don't think anytime soon
no
but that would give us the opportunity to see it on the field. I've talked with like Jimmy Ricketts who played for CFC last year and played for the Dalton Red Wolves this year, and he spoke to the fact that he's trained. He got to come up. They would come up and do training with Chattanooga, and he talked about that there was a difference in quality. So I don't know. I can't speak for that. I just from my eyes watching it, I see a difference.
Chattanooga has always done really well though in friendlies against you know pro teams just throughout their history, for the most part. I mean even. I was at that first match of the year against, oh God, what is it? Cream is? Or yeah. was it okay, whatever.
Dominicanos or the Guatemalan team?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I thought it was Cream is. They, I don't know.
I would butcher it. I failed Spanish so many times and I grew up in Southern California.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, and then they played, I was down there for Asheville on the 29th and they played a friendly the next day. And
yeah,
they tied.
Played in North Georgia.
Yes, yeah, and I had to come back to Cincinnati. I didn't go to that match, but and then Batiste. But even I mean, a lot of their biggest matches ever have obviously they fared well against pro teams. So I just don't think there's any difference in the quality at all. To be honest, I just don't. I watched 3 years of the front row of USL soccer, and when I go to CFC and those matches, I just didn't see any difference at all, to be honest. And if anything, I always felt like the CFC players are out there playing with more pride and some of the than a lot of those USL players on those teams that just kind of I don't know, there was no passion, there was no like real emotion like I see at the CFC games, and there's not the interaction between the fans either.
Oh, so I would disagree with that. So the reason
I'm not going to say I watch Red Bulls matches.
No, and I don't think you do, but like, so we've had where Eamon Zide literally jumped over a fence to come celebrate with a group of fans after scoring a goal. They have interaction after every game where they sign autographs and meet with the fans. And they're interacting with us there. So no,
yeah.
I think interaction wise,
Yeah, and I may have been exaggerating. Well, the thing is with FCC, we were averaging 20, 25,000 a game in the USL. So it, I guess it was kind of a different atmosphere. But, yeah, we always had meet and greets with the fans. I was talking more about players on other teams, but the more I think about it, as much crap as they caught from the 20,000 or whatever, they're probably not used to that, because if you watch our road games in these facilities that are, you know, pretty, they look like you're playing in the middle of a park or something.
Yeah.
In the USL, you know, that they go from those kind of environments to 20 to 25,000 people going crazy, yelling at them. They're kind of shell shocked.
Yeah, we've had to go, we've gone to that whole away game in Toronto when they're announcing 62. So I'm assuming there's four.
Are, I mean, the USL facilities, that's the whole thing when I argue with people about the MLS, that are, with people that are in the USL, I said, if you're going to be in this, you know, awful, you know, well, I'll just say not great American soccer system, you're better off being on top. I mean, I got to watch Zlatan Ibrahimovic, you know, play. I've Wayne Rooney this year. You know, I've gotten to see a lot better soccer. But if you're not on top and you're in USL League 3, I mean, what are you ever going to do? You're better off being independent like Chattanooga, like Detroit, like a grassroots team where if we can change this landscape, you can be part of the league that changes that landscape. In the USL third division, you're never going to, like, that's not going to get you anywhere.
But even they are doing the same thing, right? So I think
they may be. Yeah, we don't know for sure what they're doing, right? Like, because the whole landscape, there's so many lawsuits.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of stuff has to shake out, which the Red Wolves and these, you know, any team in that, they're basically just stuck there for eternity. You can't go anywhere. You're not going to move up. I mean, I heard they're talking relegation between two and three, but I'm not sure what that accomplishes. You're still not the top division.
Yeah, I know Edwards has talked about that. I think, once again, it just comes down to, you know, as those teams that are your New Mexico, your St. Louis, your Louisville.
St. Louis is coming to MLS.
Yeah, they are. But I'm talking about like that size group that is slowly built up, or is like New Mexico's genuinely just come out of nowhere with their 10,000.
Sacramento keeps getting rejected, even though I hear they're getting in this time. So they'll be out.
Yeah. So
I mean, are you saying that like having New Mexico and Louisville, like,
I'm saying that as when you look to the future, like I'm saying it as if, let's say USL actually does their pro rel internally, which is still kind of a closed system. It's just calling it two different leagues, right? But if they do their pro rel internally, what I'm saying is instead of playing, so let's go full on what one of the rumors is, right? That the MLS two teams will be all kicked down to League One, except for a few here or there to start it off.
That, which is what needs to happen, because they need to decide whether or not they're a minor league MLS league or they're these teams with their own entities, because the same thing happened with FCC. We, you know, draw 20, 25,000 people. They all want to send their players from MLS that aren't getting playing time, their younger players down to play against us. And there's no limit to how many players they would send down. Yeah. So there was times we're playing like half an MLS team. Yeah. And they didn't put a cap on how many players they could send down on a weekly basis. So all those MLS teams would look at it like, okay, this is a great way for them to get experience going to play at Cincinnati, because they get to play in front of, you know, such a big crowd and you know, one of the nicest facilities.
That's similar to when we went and played at Ford Madison for the first time. The Minnesota United sent down four players that all started. It's like, wait, what?
That doesn't make sense. I mean, that probably just was a coincidence. But yeah, they should count.
I'm not saying they did it because of us. I'm saying they did it because I'm just saying we've run into that same thing where you suddenly are like, wait a second, we're playing more than a third of their team is MLS players, including their starting keeper. Like, or the backup keeper for the MLS team, but the starting keeper for Ford was from MLS.
Yeah, and you're trying to compete with that team.
Yeah.
Which it's not fair to anybody in that system. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. They need to either create a separate league or the – I'm telling you, I think teams like CFC and Detroit FC and those teams are better off just being independent until this all plays out. And then maybe we can create – like, they can create a real league that has pro and, relegation, because MLS isn't going anywhere.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not. And it's and USL is always going to be a feeder league to MLS. So you're just going to be stuck in the third tier until
eternal eternity on that viewpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it really just comes down to which way do you think you're going to get better soccer? You obviously think it's from the independent NPSL style team.
Yeah.
I think it comes from aligning yourself with an entity that has proven its ability to go from nothing to a third tier to a second tier team, a second division team. And it seems like they've got really good leadership in Edwards. I could debate that. Yeah,
too,
I know. And lots of people that's my view. Your view, I'm just saying, like, my view.
There's always just things that make, I mean, like, one of my buddies used to play for Nashville, and I mean, they had like an outdoor locker room. They didn't even have a locker room for the team this season. It's like, and then that's the top USL division. A team getting ready to go to MLS, and they got to sit there and sit on chairs outside. They don't even have a locker room.
Yeah,
it's like,
the game that,
what kind of amateur?
That was the game at Loudoun, right? They got moved.
Is that
right? Yeah. That's
ridiculous. I don't know why anybody would want to be a part of that. I don't see how the league is doing a good job if that kind of stuff's happening. The broadcasts are all, I mean, there's so many times where the camera angles and you can't even see what's going on.
Right, but it's a whole lot better than my Cujo where it's shutting down all the time.
Well, yeah, that is, yes. I'm not going to argue there. Yeah. They should all stay on YouTube. Though CFC on YouTube, I never have any. Well, they had issues.
That comes down to
DCFC friendly.
So that 100% is credit that needs to be given to El Conductor, who is the one who's basically run that. He worked his tail off. Like, honestly, he did a really good job with that. The issue is they're the only ones in their Southeast Conference that was like that. Like, feeds that came from Asheville or from Knoxville or from Nashville.
Oh yeah, I watched.
They were all terrible
matches.
Feeds. It's like,
unless he went.
No.
Set him up,
anything he
good.
Set up was really good. It was when he wasn't able to go that you're like, wow, this is just bad. And so that's one thing I have liked about ESPN Plus is, for the most part, there's been a few games where legitimately you're like, wait, I'm not getting part of the field, or it cut out. That's happened here or there. But for the most part, it's been a significantly better overall, like, being able to go watch, like, so. Doing this podcast, one of the things I'll do a lot is I want to watch, like, so we hadn't played Lansing yet. About 3 weeks ago, it was our first game with Lansing. But we'd played 12 games, hadn't played them yet. So I was like, I don't know enough other than what I see on Twitter or, like, a repost of a good goal. So I went and watched a few of their games. I really wouldn't have gotten the same quality trying to do that for other divisions. But all right, I don't want to ramble forever. Is there anything else you kind of want to close us out with, something you want to mention that you didn't get a chance to say?
I'm just looking at, I got a couple things here, but no, I mean, you kind of answered a lot of things I was going to ask you without me having to ask you. So, which is good. I it's hard for me to see the benefit of the two teams for the city overall. I think that like you said, I think one of the teams is going to have to go, and eventually it would shock me if both teams are still in Chattanooga in 5 years. Okay. Can we agree on that or no?
So the only reason I say I think I would have agreed with you and gone the way that a lot of CSC fans don't want to hear, that the Red Bulls would have been here, just because of the difference in ownership. But that said, with the way they did the push for the – where they basically raised almost $1 million – and some of the other things that they've done since, I think aligning with NISA, I could see both, if they align with NISA, that's the rumor, but I could see both still being here in 5 years, because CFC has done some stuff to strengthen their position. And I think Martino, with his development, is willing to lose money. So I think that's why, not because both were successful. I think at this point, looking at just pure numbers, CFC is positioning itself to be the more financially successful, but owning your own stadium with the Red Wolves and making income off of the having concerts and things like that at the stadium will help offset the losses he has with the soccer team that I think both could still be here, but not because of what they've done on the field, more because of just the...
Just because he has deep pockets broadcast and, rights and yeah, and, the and USL also, expansion money yeah, going in his pockets.
Yeah, and then also the development. I mean, he's become a millionaire because of what he's done as a developer. And yeah. The Eastridge area, it's not just his development. Top Golf is rumored to be there, and it seems pretty like a pretty accurate rumor.
I've heard about that. What is Top Golf? No, we have a Top Golf here in Cincinnati. Well, it's in Westchester, which is a suburb, you know, but it's, you know, 20 minutes from downtown Cincinnati. But is that big of a development to get a Top Golf? I'm not sure what the economics
it's more of
a Top Golf is.
I think it's more of a location thing. So you're talking about Ootawah and some of that area is and where it's at, like it's right at 75-24 split. So it puts them in a good position where people from north of Atlanta, like north of Marietta that live that area, if they're deciding between going through Atlanta traffic and they want to take a weekend to go do something fun, they might come up, do Top Golf, go hang out in the city, that type of stuff. And we're a huge tourist attraction city. You know this. Right?
Oh, yeah. That's only reason I know about you guys.
That area attracts because of a Tennessee law that was done a number of years back that allows for rebates on tax rebates and stuff. So there's a lot that brings them in there where they don't – it's not a huge risk because they get basically – the difference in tax revenue for the area of land. So if the land was creating no real sales tax revenue, they get that difference back to them for a certain amount of time before it starts going back to the city because it wouldn't have made money for the city anyways. So there's some things like that, some state sales tax incentives that help generate that, but it's a revitalizing area. Like Eastridge, there's a YouTube video if you want to have a good laugh about Eastridge that talks about its payday advance loans and all that other stuff. It's got some sketchy parts to it, but the part where the stadium is not really there. It's right at the freeway, and so it's a little different. But anyways, Matt, it was good having you on. Thank you for having a reasonable conversation and being willing to bring the other view.
It was interesting. I feel like I've learned a lot. You know, I can't say I wish the Red Wolves good luck in the future just because I've been through the USL and obviously I have a vested interest. But I do appreciate this conversation and, you know, hearing your perspective on it.
Thanks again, Matt, for coming on. If you're interested in following Matt on Twitter, he's Truth Adair. That's TRUTHADAIR on Twitter. It's Truth Adair on Twitter. He's a good follow. Usually has some interesting things to say. And I think had a lot to bring to us here. So, like I said, thanks again, Matt. And hope to talk to you in the future.